Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah, relax. Yeah, take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay. You got me?
Yeah.
Like, loosen a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can even play the whole season. No game suspension, none of that. All right?
Yeah.
I may even give you some money. All right? I don't want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
There's nothing here,
baby. Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're gonna find out how far we can push ourselves.
Panther fans, welcome to another episode of Cat Scratch Radio. I'm Jackson, your host. Welcome back after taking a few weeks off. No real explanation other than, life gets in the way sometimes. But hey, I'm happy to be back. Wish I could be talking about a more successful Panther season, but I think last time we had this show, shit was circling the toilet, it seemed like, back then, and we won a couple games, made us think that we had a shot, though, you know, knew it was going to be tough. But hey, the Raiders, I think, essentially have put us out of our misery, so, you know, get it out of the way. Flush the toilet on our season. That's our season swirling, three straight divisions, playoff appearance, back-to-back Super Bowl going down the toilet right there. So, yeah. So that's where we're at. It's just been, I think, as we reflect on this season, I got Brian Beavers Lewis from the blog here to join me here shortly. I'll have him on. I see he's actually on the line. Brian, I'll get to you. I got a couple other people out there. I'm going to talk to Brian for a little while, and then we'll open up the phone lines a little bit later. The chat is open. Let's see, topics. Obviously, when we talk about the Raiders game, we've had more injuries, more people on IR, more practice squad people being pulled in. I think Tater, Eric Summers could probably go get on the practice squad right now. They're just looking for warm bodies. It's so bad on the offensive line. And we're still on the West Coast. Got the Seahawks coming up, so we'll be talking about that as well. I got some gifts I'm going to post later tonight. I think Walker's doing a good job with the MMO, the Monday Morning Optimist job. We've kind of punted it around. You could say the MMO has been the hot football amongst the CSR inner circle because, it takes a special person to find positive, or shall we say optimism, when you're 4-7 and, you know, when you expected so much more this season. And, have been so close to so much more. Is this what the 5 of our 7 losses have been a field goal one way or the other? it just sucks. Either we miss a field goal or so the other team makes a field goal. I think that's 5 of the 7 losses. So, what can I say? So with that, let's see if I can get Brian on the phone here. How's it going, Brian?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So, let's see. You didn't have the MMO this week. You had the recap, right?
That's not so tough. Had the recap. I'll take the MMO next week, actually. So that'll be fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I know you saw on the Slack where there towards the end of the game, Walker's like, all right, I'm coming up with nothing here. Who's got anything to be optimistic about?
I know, right?
at least Thomas Davis made some plays, and, you know, he found a few things. So
yeah, that was a warm moment there, yeah.
So.
Oh, boy.
What do you think, I don't know, what's your lasting impression from the game?
I am actually kind of upset that Derek Carr dislocated his finger during that game, only because it kind of like gave us the shred of hope that maybe Carolina can come back and take that game and possibly put them in position to save the season. But this has just been one of those years where everything that could possibly go wrong for the Panthers has. And I think that moment where the team like rallied back and managed to put themselves in position to win was just like throwing up smoke. Like
it took an 8-point lead, for Christ's sakes.
I know. You know? And like, if that didn't happen, there's no way that the Panthers come close to winning that game. Cause like Derek Carr compared to Matt McGloin, like, come on, those two quarterbacks are miles apart. And
it instantly changed their offense.
There.
You could see it just in those two or three plays he played.
You could tell on that one third down, they didn't want to throw the ball. They didn't. Like, they had run the ball two straight plays in a game where they weren't running the ball well to begin with. So, clearly they were just trying to bide time for Carr to come back, which I was surprised that they didn't just pop his finger back in place and put him right back in the game. But I guess with the quarterback, it's a little different. But I think that it sucks more that Carolina came back and managed to make that a game, because it wasn't going to be a game if Carr played the whole game. Let's be real here.
Well, you know, I guess for me, the only thing I'm really angry about throughout that game, even though I could point to a few other things, to me, was Ron Rivera punting on 4th and 2 feet, you know, I want to say, 3.5? I need to look that up, actually. I've been meaning to look that up.
It was about
5 minutes. All day long.
But,
was it about 5 minutes or 4 minutes?
Yeah, but it was about
something,
5 minutes, but still, you're right. It was stupid.
Yeah, and look what happened. I mean, it shouldn't have been any surprise that they were able to drive down in the field goal range. Why, you know, so either you could have went for it on 4th and 1 right there, or 4th and a half, and then driven to win the game. Instead, you were hoping at best, and honestly, it came out okay that we actually did get the ball back, but we gave up the lead, but it was only 3 points, and if not for that missed reception by Olsen, but even then, all we were doing was we might have had time for one play. Actually, that's another thing I need to look up, but we were playing for a tie then at the end. We might have had one play to chuck it in the end zone. I'm trying to think. Right, and then Cam actually gave up a sack on the last. Oh, there's still a minute left in the game there. But that was 4th down.
Now, situationally speaking, Carolina had a chance on that last drive. That said, I mean, we've seen it over the Ron Rivera era. Like, whenever he plays aggressive and goes for it on 4th down, doesn't, like, allow for us to become complacent, Carolina does well. I mean, you look at the 12-3 year. They started out crappy as hell that year, and all of a sudden Ron Rivera flipped the switch and was like, hey, we're going to play Madden now. We're going to go for it on 4th and short. And they went 12-3. And then we go back to the year to 2014 where – the team was obviously not nearly as talented as it was the year before and the year after, but he still played that complacent, like, let's play not to lose instead of play to win type football. And, you know, it's just when you have a player like Cam, 4th and 1 should be a situation where you play, where you call that run by Cam, or you call something, because he is the best short yardage quarterback and maybe even running back in the NFL right now. And at that juncture, I just don't see why you don't go for it. The season's on the line. Like, that game could have made the difference between looking at the game, the season being lost and the season being potentially reclaimed. And I'm not saying Carolina's talented enough right now, because the injuries have been really bad all around, but just in that situation, why wouldn't you go for it? You have nothing else to lose at that point.
My sentiment exactly. So, I thought he had learned that lesson. You want to put the ball in your offense's hands. And I get that maybe he just didn't trust his offensive line, but, did, fail us by not, he had a minute 45 left, so I don't know. I guess, it said he had 5 minutes and 15 seconds was when we punted it. So, it did work out that we got the ball back, but we also gave up the lead.
Well, there's one key
point that hurt,
too.
But still, a minute 45, it just the pass rush got to us.
Well, that's exactly right. And fear is about the only anomaly in this fact, in this sense. But whenever the Panthers have been put in a situation where they need to pass the ball, they need to get the ball downfield to even tie the game, we've seen it. It just doesn't work because it's not how the Panthers' offense is designed. And last year, like I said, was an anomaly because we had Michael Oher, we had the fully healthy offensive line, including Ryan Khalil. The only really weak link was Mike Remmers playing on the right side, and he's not that bad. So last year was okay for Carolina to have to bring it back and force either a win or overtime, but this year they just can't do that. And it was just like that in 2013. It was like that in 2012. It was like that in 2014. Anytime there was less than 2 minutes left, the defense pinned their ears back and came after Cam, and the offense couldn't protect him. The offensive line could not hold up so that he could make a throw down the field. It's the same song and dance.
We've seen that in a lot of games. We've seen that in a lot, that they just pin it back, and it was Bruce Irvin on one side, Khalil Mack on the other. We've seen that plenty of times, like you said, in the very end of the game where Cam's got to make a play.
Yeah. It's not a very complex formula. Carolina's offensive line is not built to pass protect like that, and they keep getting put in positions like that because the play calling is not conducive to putting the game ahead as much as possible. So, it sucks because the offensive line certainly isn't good, but it's hard for me to blame them when there has been little done to address it.
Yeah. So it seems like the big war on Twitter today, the last couple of days, has been whether Gettleman is to blame for the state of the offensive line. Where do you stand on that?
I was actually thinking about writing an article about this, but I wasn't really sure how to put it into words, so I guess I'll give you my musings on it.
All right.
I think that Carolina's recent success over the last 3 years with the playoffs and whatnot was a big problem in the sense that Carolina, like last year, obviously the Panthers were playing very well. I'm not going to say last year was a fluke because they went out there and blew out the Cardinals and they put up 30 something points on Seattle in the first half in the playoffs. But Carolina is not nearly as a complete a team as some of the other teams like the Patriots out there. So picking that far back in the first round, you almost have to go best player available. Otherwise you could get a second-round player in the first round when you have a chance to get a guy who could be a really good player for his entire career by picking the guys who fall to you, like Vernon Butler, for example. And obviously Carolina wasn't in a great position early on to make those pickups on the offensive line, but I got to look at the deal for like a guy like Kelvin Beachum, who's on Oakland as their left tackle. Oakland structured the deal in a way where after the first year, if they wanted to cut ties with the guy, they could. And I'm sure that Kelvin Beachum would have been more than happy to play for Carolina after they just came off of a Super Bowl berth,
Right.
It's just one of those things where Gettleman's just so tight about how he spends money that he's not going to find that top-tier offensive line talent no matter where he goes. Like, your record and your pedigree can only go so far when it comes to free agency. Free agents want to get paid, you know, unless they may not have a contract by regular season. A guy like Kelvin Beachum is going to have one. So it's frustrating, to say the least. But I think that based on the way the cap's going to look next year, that maybe Gettleman will open up the checkbook a little bit, especially after this year. But I think it does fall on his shoulders a little bit, but I think the fact that Carolina succeeded under his watch has also hurt him a little bit too, only because he's only been in position to pick those last few first-round talent guys for the last 3 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've known for two seasons we had a liability behind Michael Orr. So, you know, there was nothing there. And honestly, when he went down and the whole Rimmer switching over was a bit of a surprise to me because, you know, I figured the guy they had lined up behind him, either Hawkins or, you know, somebody would, you know, rather than moving Remmers over and, you know, the jury's still out on Darrell Williams, but, you know, he had to know that he was running a big risk by not having anything really behind Michael Orr. So the fact, we had him two games, not even two full games, and so there we go.
Yep.
And
we could have been, it could have been the same song and dance last year. It's just that Orr played the whole 16 games. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Remmers is a valuable player. As much as people want to hate on Remmers, he's a valuable player in the sense that, like, in a pinch, he can play on the left side for you and he can play on the right side.
Yeah.
He's a swing tackle. But you can't have him all 16 games of the year. It's just not plausible. He's not that good.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's just not going to hold up that teams are going to abuse him at some point because he's just not as sound in his base. It's consistent. But, you know, we got one good season out of him, and two was just stretching it.
Yep.
So, you know, I think he's done. I think he's going to retire. Be surprised if he comes back.
Who, Orr?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, every week that it passed by, it seems like, because he made no progress in the concussion protocol. So there's one of two ways that goes. Either he had a really severe concussion that was causing him to have concussion-like symptoms for several weeks, or he just wasn't trying to get out of the concussion protocol. Both of those are bad things.
I mean, they just both spell to me retirement. It's like either, you know, he truly is like he's having constant headaches, you know, or vertigo or something. You know, he's demonstrating some symptoms. Or he's just lost his desire, you know, and I could see how, you know, maybe you just really lose your desire to play and how that could manifest it into, you know, symptoms, you know. But, you know, he's got a Super Bowl ring. I don't think he's that worried about it, you know?
No, it's unfortunate because Orr really deserved the redemption he got his first year in Carolina. But
I
was really hoping that he would be at least the right tackle of the future, if not the left tackle of the future. And it sounds like next year Carolina's going to be looking for two tackles instead of just one, which is not a good thing for a team that's trying to make it back into the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Well, all we can do is pick it up next year. We know we've got some core pieces in place. Hey, here's some positive spin for you. You can go ahead and pre-write this for your Monday MMO. Next year's schedule's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I actually did see that. It's favorable, but...
I mean, we do have to go to New England to play the Patriots, but you know, we get the Dolphins and the Bills at home. Got to go to the Jets, so I like the alignment with that division, and we play the NFC East, which is going to be a little tough. But
you never know.
It means
with them. They're always.
If we end up in last place, it means you also play the 49ers and probably. Oh no, we play the NFC North. That's right.
So probably
so
the
Eagles
Bears
so far. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll play all NFC North teams: Packers, Bears.
Oh, okay.
Lions, Vikings.
No, that's right. It would be NFC East, the last place team. So that would probably be
yeah.
the Eagles at the
and NFC
standing.
West,
yeah.
right. So 49ers and Eagles right now.
49ers
but...
and Eagles, yep. Yeah.
I
do have one question for you, if you don't mind me kind of derailing.
Sure.
I've noticed a few things over the last few weeks just watching the offense go and whatnot. Obviously, Greg Olsen's normally the first option when it comes to moving the chains. And usually Kelvin Benjamin's the second. And I kind of just watching it, like, obviously Benjamin's good for one of those, like, ridiculous catches every game, but he also is good for one of those drops every game that just kills you. Or, like, obviously, the Kansas City fumble was him trying to do too much. Obviously, but it just seems like he lacks the ability to get separation sometimes. And after watching his game against the Raiders, I genuinely was wondering: is he a number one wide receiver? Like, is he going to be the guy that is like the Steve Smith of your offense, for example, where when all else fails, you just throw him the ball and hope he makes a play? And I don't know, like, just watching this year with him, I truly wonder if, like, maybe it might benefit Carolina to bring in some guy like an upper-tier wide receiver like Odell Beckham to take that pressure off of him.
Well, the only way we're going to get somebody like that is if we draft him.
Right.
I just don't see him paying
like
the kind of money for that. I'd be mad if he actually paid big money for a wide receiver right now. I'd be like, what?
Oh, no.
Give me a tackle, please.
I was just saying, like, hypothetically, next year we could be in position to draft somebody in the top 10, maybe.
Yeah.
And
you
see that upper-tier wide receiver fall to you. Do you take him? Like, obviously the offensive line's a big deal, but –
yeah.
If you think about it, in the future, you could be lined up with a guy like Amari Cooper or Odell Beckham who has, like, and obviously I'm just saying Odell Beckham specifically from a physical standpoint. I fucking hate the guy's personality, but you have that guy who can do everything. Like, they can run the routes right. They can get the separation. They can beat teams deep.
Yeah.
You could pair that guy with a guy with Kelvin Benjamin, who is a physical matchup no matter where you put him. And then your third wide receiver could be anybody from Devin Funchess, who is a little bit of a smoother athlete than Kelvin Benjamin, not quite as physically foreboding as Benjamin. Or you could put Philly Brown there, or you could put Ted Ginn there. Like, I just wonder if Kelvin really is the guy where you can consider him to be like the top tier number one wide receiver sometimes, because I think his rookie year was kind of overblown by just the fact that he was just flooded with targets the whole time.
Yeah. He's been a bust this year. I mean, he just had a decent
game this
past week.
And that's not
entirely
his fault. I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know. He had a couple good games, but, yeah, he's being covered very well. He didn't have much across from him. I really thought that Shepherd kid was going to be a little bit better this year, but I think he's still going to be a good one at some point.
You mean Sterling Shepard from the Giants?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's pretty good. I don't think he's
he's
has
Odell
the benefit
Beckham,
of
but...
playing alongside Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham, but you know, he's definitely going to be decent in the NFL, I would say.
Yeah. Would you give up the Panthers' second round pick for Joe Thomas?
Here's the only problem I have with that suggestion. Joe Thomas is getting up there in years. So you trade that second round pick who could turn into a guy like James Bradberry. Like, I know the Panthers secondary hasn't been great this year, but what I see with James Bradberry is Josh Norman, but earlier in his career. Like, that kid is showing a lot of flashes of what Josh Norman was showing and what Josh Norman is now with his just style of play, the kind of athlete he is. Like, you give up that, that opportunity to get somebody who could start
Josh
and be
four
a good
seasons
player.
To get there.
Yeah, Josh Norman's almost 30 now. Like when I look at James Bradberry compared to Josh Norman, and obviously, like, you've seen that I've written articles about defensive backs. Like, I used to play defensive back. When I look at Josh Norman's film that I used to watch compared to James Bradberry, Bradberry is so much further along than Norman was his rookie year. He's not playing outside the scheme. Sure, he makes that one or two mistakes a game where it's like, you could have done one thing, but you did this instead. But Josh Norman was playing so far outside the playbook at times that it caused problems for the entire defense. But Bradberry hasn't done that. And I see Bradberry already starting to find that anticipation that you want from an upper-tier corner. So when I look at that, when you say, well, let's get rid of that second-round pick and shore up a left-tackle position. Yeah, Joe Thomas is an all-pro left tackle, maybe one of the best he's ever played. But you may only get him for two or three more years, you know? Where Bradberry is going to be at least a four-year starter for Carolina.
Yeah, good point.
So that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I had forgotten that your original username when you came into CSR was Cam to Smitty all day.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I like it. You're right, man. And so is Kelvin Benjamin the new Smitty or not? And, I'm not feeling it. And I also disagree with the people who are saying we need to get rid of Ted Ginn. In place of who? I mean, who's going to fill those shoes? Because Lord knows we need that deep threat.
Ted Ginn has been by far – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think Philly Brown has filled that role or could be. You know, he's certainly not as fast as Ginn.
What I've seen from Ginn this year is he's polished himself off quite a bit as a wide receiver. He's showing a lot more fundamentally sound, just in general, physical attributes. Like, he's dragging his feet. He's got good footwork. He's running better routes. He's making better catches. Like, Ted Ginn has evolved ever since coming to Carolina, and I think that he's by far the most consistent wide receiver that Carolina has at this point. Like, getting rid of him makes no sense unless you have a guy who can come in who has that deep threat ability, who also, like, at this point, like, replacing Ted Ginn, the only way you're going to replace him is with a guy who is, like, a second-round pick who has those attributes. Like, he's been somebody that Cam Newton trusts. So, you know, like, I don't think we should get rid of Ted Ginn at all. He's been one of the few people who we can look at and say, what has he done wrong all year, you know?
Well, he hasn't broken a punt return for a touchdown.
That's true.
I don't know if that's being wrong, though.
Yeah. Well, in this day and age, most of the punts get called for blocking the backs anyway, if you watch most games, which is awful.
That's true.
But, you know,
anytime we have a good one, it gets to return, it gets sent back anyway. So, yeah, what's
usually
the point?
Joe Webb's fault, I found, too.
Usually
Joe Webb's
fault. Yeah. I voted for Joe Webb for the Pro Bowl. The special teamer.
I mean, the guy does a lot of things on special teams, and to be our backup quarterback is super nice, but he's definitely not, like, on the same level as some of the other great special teamers out there, like Colin Jones, for example.
Yeah. I wonder if Colin will be back this weekend. I remember if he was still in the concussion protocol or if he finally came back.
I want to say he played this weekend, but I don't remember, only because, like, by the time the second quarter rolled around, I was, like, fairly drunk. So.
Yeah. I actually didn't drink this time. It's been the last couple that I've kind of gotten cross-eyed by the end of the game. Let's see. Colin Jones. Yep. He played on special teams only, but yeah, he played.
Mm. That's probably good for him to only stick on special teams.
Yeah. Of course, Michael Griffin, he's the new addition. I haven't really been impressed. Hasn't really hurt us that I can tell, but he only played 11 snaps. So,
yeah.
Now, McClain, I haven't heard on McClain. I think he went out with a rib injury or something, didn't he? Of course, he came back.
He got hurt on that touchdown against, what is it, Seth Roberts?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he got hurt on that play, and I think that he stayed out, but I think that it may have been some kind of leg injury.
That's right. It looked like it was ribs, but then they actually said it was like his leg.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, the way he went down, I was like, he either broke his ribs or he just got the wind knocked out of him. But then they were like, oh, his leg's hurt. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So, yeah.
So it looks like Tyler Larson's going to start at center for us. That's
exciting. That's where we got. Yep.
That's,
I mean, he didn't play bad on Sunday. Like,
no.
The running game really picked up for some reason when he was on it, in at center. It could have just been his fresh legs, but I actually tweeted at Tater to tell him to put Tyler in the Hog Molly report, which he did not do, and I'm very upset about. But
Tater didn't get the memo, huh? 6'4", 335.
Oh, he favorited my tweet. He saw it. I know he did.
Oh, he saw it.
Yeah.
He's been in four games. He's basically a rookie. So, trial by fire. Could get five starts.
Hey, I mean, sorry.
You know, I said, well, he could get five starts.
He could. I mean, worst case scenario, the Panthers find a better backup than Gino Gradkowski for Ryan Khalil. Worst case scenario, you know that he sucks and you go find better offensive line depth next year, which is what we're probably going to do anyway. So, it's a win-win in my book.
They got Larson listed as a guard, so center's not even his position, apparently. So, let's see.
Yeah,
we find that Ryan Wendell, 7 years, friend of Fresno State. He's actually listed as
a
center.
I actually remember Wendell's name for some reason, but I don't remember why.
Played for the Patriots.
That could be it. But yeah, I was surprised with Larson because I remember when I used to do my little 53-man depth chart predictions, Larson was listed as a guard, so I was like, well, we have all these other guards on the roster, and then all of a sudden he made it to be like the third center on the roster early on, like when the season started, and I was like, okay, that's fine, I guess. And I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. We got time for a couple more topics, but we're coming up right on the hour, and we're about to open the lines up. I see we got a number of people out there, some numbers I recognize. So, guys, you just hold on here, and we'll open the lines up, see what everyone else has to say. So, I guess Seahawks. If you'd asked me Saturday how the Panthers would fare against the Seahawks, I'd say we get crushed. And then they go to Tampa and put up 5 points. What the hell? So I don't know what to think of the Seahawks, really, other than that they're just two different teams, home versus road. any thoughts?
I think that you're correct in the sense that, yes, they do play differently when they're not home, only because then the offense that they're playing against has, you know, a semblance of continuity. They can actually, like, change plays at the line. They don't have to run off a silent snap count, which is everything you have to do in Seattle. That's what makes it so difficult to play there. Like, the crowd is a big deal in Seattle. But I think the other thing that people are really underscoring is the fact that Seattle's offensive line is actually bad. They don't have Marshawn Lynch anymore. They have Thomas Rawls, who's coming off of his big injury. They lost C.J. Precise after a pretty good game from him. Like, so their running game is suspect right now because they don't necessarily have a great running back there, and their offensive line hasn't protected Wilson. That's part of why Wilson was injured earlier in the year, because he's getting hit so much. Like, one game that I watched was against Miami, and that game ended up being like a 6-3 game or something like that. So I think Tampa Bay just managed to get after Russell Wilson enough that they couldn't get their offense in any kind of rhythm. So Carolina might be able to take advantage of that. And I say might, like definitely emphasizing the word might there.
I mean, I'm not expecting Keekly to be back, so Jimmy Graham scares the hell out of me. But you're right, we've got to get pressure on them up the middle. It's very important to get pressure in front of Russell Wilson's face. But, you know, if we can't contain him on the outside, he always kills us with his legs. So, you know, but the offensive line, just as Rivera called it, a catastrophe, a catastrophe. I don't know if you meant to coin a phrase or not, but, you know. Let's see. If we covered all the... Yeah, we actually got a roughing the passer penalty.
I was amazed by that.
Yeah, it wasn't even really a good call. I mean...
It wasn't even as blatant as the other one that you should have gotten flags for. Like...
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. I know I recognize this number. Yeah, I don't have my roster in front of me of numbers, but you're on the call. 336-775. I know this is somebody that calls all the time. I can't remember who, though. You're on the call, 336-775-6000.
Oops, I had it on mute. It's catastrophe. How are you doing, guys?
Nice segue there.
Wow.
Rivera calls the offensive line catastrophe, and then he jumps on the phone.
There it is. Yeah, I had my phone on mute, man. I'm sorry.
No worries. No worries. I was just rapping with Brian here a little bit. And now just open the lines up. Brian, you're going to hang on, ain't you?
Yeah, I'll be here. I'll listen.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to go to 11:30.
I'll even
chip
in if you're
then.
Okay with that.
Oh, yeah. So.
Get a little co-hosting. All right. All right.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, what do you think, Kat, man? Raiders game, who you more mad at?
Well, I'm mad for losing. Definitely mad at Rivera for not going for it on 4th-and-1. I don't care about his explanation for not going for it. Don't even care. Should have gone for it. That'd be that. I really wanted to talk about Kelvin Benjamin, Bradberry and Worley, and then the artist formerly known as Tolbert. Those are the three things I really, really wanted to talk about with you guys. So,
well, let's start with the last one, because, I mean, I don't blame Tolbert that much, because we really knew he wasn't a great blocker per se, though he did have a really good block on that long run by Jace Stewart. But
yes, sir.
More often than not, he doesn't necessarily make a great block. But we just don't give him the ball anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's a function of the coaches actually knowing that he's not going to be what he was two or three years ago.
Can I order two beverages up to my room?
Heck yeah, you can, Brian. So proud of you.
Hell yeah, man.
Matter of fact, you know what?
Special guest on CSR Radio. I told him that many bars.
There it
free,
is, folks.
There
it
is. Charge
that to my room. All right. Thank you.
There it is.
Tell him to put it on my account. All right.
That's good. 2 or 3 years ago, like when we saw Tolbert bounce off a couple, Philadelphia players and go to the end zone, that's what we remember him by. He's obviously not the same. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I just think he just, there's not a routine fit in our offense or that, or he just becomes too predictable when he's in there as far as what the defense is going to key off of. You know, you know, it's like you bring in a second tight end and then you run the ball every time when that second tight end comes in. The defense knows you're going to run the ball. I mean, we were so guilty of that a few years ago with Jeff Davidson. You know, so I don't know if we're just getting too predictable when Tolbert's in there, but it seemed to me that when we did throw him a pass or two in the flat, he usually did pretty well with them. But we don't even try it anymore. So, I you know, but is that really part of our offense?
We do try. I hope you guys can recall this play from Sunday, but there was a play, in fact, where Tolbert was wide open on third and maybe seven or so, and Cam hits him on the flat. He runs straight forward, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, Tolbert's going to run over this defensive back, and he's going to get the first down. And you know what he freaking does? He spins and gets tackled for a loss, and he gets tackled just before the first down. That was as clear an indicator as ever to me that Tolbert is not the same player he used to be.
And Brian, this
good
is
point.
Exactly
I remember the play now that you mentioned that.
This is exactly why I brought it up, Jackson, because I'm telling you, 2-3 years ago, that guy doesn't exist. He just smashes him. It's that simple.
Yeah.
He does. He's just a big guy now who is trying to use. And don't get me wrong, back in his heyday, Tolbert had some really good footwork under him. Like, if you guys remember a few years ago, this is like a little bit of a throwback, but there was a game against the Bears where he juked out Brian Urlacher of all freaking people. Like, Tolbert had some good footwork to combine with his power running game, but now, like, he's not the same power runner. He doesn't run over people.
Yeah.
He doesn't run through people. He's no longer the bowling ball. Like,
at that point, you just have
a crappy halfback who isn't fast at that point is the way I see Tolbert.
From the time he got knocked up by Cam Chancellor, he got stood up and knocked back. He has not been the same since. He has not. From that point, you guys remember what, 3 years ago? When we played Seattle, when they knocked us out of the playoffs, and you remember Tolbert caught the pass and Cam Chancellor stood him up. From that point, he just hadn't been the same. He really hadn't.
I don't know. I kind of disagree with that sentiment, only in the sense that I remember last year against the Eagles when he broke, like, what, four tackles to make it in the end zone. It was like a very Deshaun Foster-esque play. And
I know which play you're talking about.
I think that play was very good. Obviously, a lot of that also had to do with just the deficiencies of the Eagles' defense, but I think what's really what happened is just over time, Tolbert has degraded. He's not – because when he was in San Diego, not only was he powerful, but he was fast, and now he lacks speed, he lacks power, he lacks the ability to bowl people over, so now you just have
a guy who – He's a big old tub of
catch.
Like Cam.
Yeah, exactly. He's basically a guy you could maybe play at tight end as your third tight end who can catch a little bit. Like, he doesn't have moves. He doesn't have power. He's useless.
He's like hair gel. He's a tub of goo.
He's like hair gel.
Yeah. Yep. But I did want to get y'all's take on Kelvin Benjamin. Brian, I feel like you're kind of disappointed in Kelvin, and not because, and actually, you know, even Jackson too, because you know maybe he's not the number one that we want him to be. But you do have to remember, as soon as you get your food there, Mr. Brian.
That was some fast service right there, man. I put in a call. I said, look,
Jimmy
make
John,
it snappy.
There it is.
My boy Brian's hungry. He's had a long day. Throw in a bottle of champagne. Did you get the champagne, too? I'm going to call and complain if you didn't. Anyway, go ahead, Kat.
You should. What I was going to say was I feel like Kelvin Benjamin still has a chance to be the number one. He didn't have his whole sophomore year because of ACL. I still feel like he's trying to trust that knee.
I thought I muted you guys. I'm sorry.
It's no excuse, but he has to definitely learn the playbook, which I think is something that was one of his knocks coming out of college. Being able to understand the playbook, run the right routes, whether it's, you know, three routes or nine routes or, you know, anything. He still has the opportunity, the size. He doesn't have to be the fastest person in the world. He could still be a number one. It's just my opinion. I'm not ready to be number one yet.
That's actually not my toilet flushing this time.
I was going to say, you just did a drop on me.
All right.
You didn't have to press any buttons and you did good.
So let's all guess what Brian got for dinner. I'm going to say a chicken sandwich with fries. What do you think, Kat?
I'm going to say a mushroom and pepperoni pizza.
Brian, you there?
And
oh, maybe he muted. And finally,
so I thought that by muting my mic, you wouldn't hear any of what was going on, but clearly I was wrong. So I apologize for that.
What did you order to eat? That's the going question right now.
I actually ordered a chicken quesadilla. I'm at a hotel for some training
close.
Right now.
Jackson,
yeah.
I said a chicken sandwich and fries. So.
Fireball on.
Yeah,
me.
I do apologize for that. I assumed that if I muted my mic, you couldn't hear what I was saying, but that was wrong. So.
Oh, we've heard much worse in the background during Crap Scratch Radio. So. Show within the show. Yeah.
Well, you know what?
But no,
the
as
other,
far as
the
what
other...
I heard, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brian.
No. Go ahead, Brian.
Now, as far as what I've heard about you saying about Kelvin Benjamin, no, I agree. Like, he has time to right the ship. And I think that it's more just a frustration with the fact that Carolina needs somebody else other than Greg Olsen to make those plays when they really need them. And Kelvin hasn't really done that at times this year. So I think maybe it has something to do with that for me. It's just that I look at Kelvin as a guy. He's basically Cam Newton playing wide receiver. He's basically uncoverable, but he has very big problems getting separation. It could just be a coaching thing. It could just be something he needs to work on. Obviously, not every player comes out of the first round and makes a huge impact their first 2 years. It's just something that – it's another thing, too, where Kelvin sat out last year. So we look at him as a third-year player, but he is a second-year player. So I do understand those
rights. Absolutely agree.
But the only thing I look at that – with him is simply that he doesn't have that game-breaking ability that you see from a lot of his peers from that class. He's not the guy who can take a play like 60 yards to the house, in my opinion. And his hands are just so inconsistent that it's frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
I agree with all that.
But, yeah. One thing I will say in his defense is that he's not a one-dimensional receiver like a lot of people. You know, whenever pundits talk about him, he's got that size. He's a red zone threat, and it's like, well, you know, he can go deep. He can go. I mean, he runs all the routes. You know, and he can make all the catches. I don't know. Maybe it's the game plan, but.
But that's the key, though, is that he can run all the routes and he can make all the catches. The question is, does he do them all effectively all the time? That's my issue.
Right.
Not that he can't do it, because we've all seen him do everything that you're talking about. But then we've also seen him do the same things and not succeed. And that's what scares me about him a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's like the scouting report was right. I mean, he had questionable hands coming out, and that's kind of the thing that we've always and at times he looks like he's got awesome hands, but I think it's just concentration. I think it's between the ears piece.
Yep.
So
yep, absolutely.
Well, all right, let's get to the Bradbury and Worley questions, because you had some comments about them. I was just noticing that we held Amari Cooper to 22 yards on 4 catches.
Yes. And that was one of my biggest points that I want to make with the opportunity that I had to talk. I love their growth right now, being this late in the season, being rookies, taking their bumps, Bradbury being out, what, 3 games? I love what they could be for us in the future. I really do. I think they're going to be good. It's going to be a good tandem for years to come.
And I think that Bradbury was on Cooper most of the day, and Crabtree was on Worley. Because Crabtree had 8 receptions for 110. So it took their tight end and their number 3 slot receiver to score on it. Probably only because Luke was out.
That's right, yeah. They definitely attacked AJ.
Yeah. And I figure Worley was on Crabtree because Worley led the team in tackles. He had 12 total. Crabtree had 8 receptions. So, you know, he was making those plays in front of Worley. And, you know, getting tackled, but he's also making the catches, where Bradbury only had 6 tackles. Worley had a couple passes knocked down too, though. So
Crabtree
used
the slot quite a bit too.
Who?
Crabtree. He usually works out of the slot, which is why he was running and making his biggest gains against AJ Klein when he was, you know, running those seam routes, you know, from the slot. I'm just excited to have them both. I think Bradbury, like Brian was saying a little bit earlier, is probably what Josh Norman was right now and what Josh Norman was, you know, maybe year 2, maybe year 3. It's just Bradbury knows how to stay in his lane. Josh Norman didn't know how to do that, which is why he spent so much time in Rivera's doghouse.
Yep.
He probably could have been better if he just actually listened to, you know, what Coach Rivera was saying.
His learning curve would have been shorter.
The guy knows defense. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. He knows routes, and he knows how to play the routes. So, yeah, he's playing well. And let me just say, I went ahead and opened up the lines. I saw Nerd Canadian Panthers. I just got his email saying he was listening. I'm not sure which number.
Cool.
So I opened them all up there. What's up, CP?
I'm here. Nothing much. How are you guys doing tonight?
Are you the anonymous?
I'm on the phone with CP right now. Oh, my God. What's up, man?
I'm telling you.
So what's the latest in the Gettleman's to blame for the offensive tackle situation? Do we have an update on that?
I don't know. I thought that was a bad take. You know, I don't know how you can watch guys like, you know, Byron Bell and Nate Chandler, Mike Remmers and Michael Orr. I just don't know how you can say that Gettleman has done all he could at the offensive tackle position. If only he was more aggressive like he was this offseason at the cornerback position, maybe the Panthers would be better off. You know, they're obviously taking their rookie bumps with Worley and Bradbury. I just wish they took 2 offensive tackles and maybe, you know, they took their rookie bumps too, and maybe we could get over this by now. But
so what
like
you're saying is fire
Gettleman. More.
That's all I'm hearing right now.
Fire
Gettleman. Oh, no. Not on that train. Not yet.
Is anyone else on the fire Shuler train?
CP and I have had a few nice Twitter conversations about that. So,
well, CP is Shula's best buddy. They're like buddies. So,
yeah, clearly
they're on the train together.
Shula
probably.
Advocate, if you will,
sharing a cabin.
I guess.
Yeah.
I actually think Shula had a bad game against Oakland. Oakland actually surprised me with how much man coverage they ended up playing. And I thought the Panthers were a little bit unprepared as far as their route concepts in this game, because it seemed like it was just a lot of isolation routes. You know, you're just hoping your guy can beat their guy, and that often didn't end up happening. Greg Olsen had a lot of attention. He was continuously pressed up at the line of scrimmage. And then you have guys like Kelvin Benjamin, who just can't separate against man coverage. You know, the
yep.
Raiders played really good man coverage, and the Panthers just looked unprepared, in my opinion.
Well, you're right.
Their two
you're
touchdowns
right,
were
like
against man coverage, though. So, but I think you're bringing up a good point that when we recognize that, we've got to go deep. We've got to challenge them in those one-on-ones, and it's got us back
right.
in that game. Would you disagree with that? Or it's just not successful very often.
Yeah, one concept that I really like is the mesh concept, which is two crossing routes. I think that's really effective against man-to-man coverage, and I don't think the Panthers ran much of that. I wish they would.
I don't think they ran any CP.
Yeah.
Mesh concept plays.
You have two really fast guys in Brown and Ginn who can, you know, get some separation. They can get yards after the catch, and, you know, against man coverage, the mesh concept is one of the most effective, you know,
yep.
passing plays you can use, and the Panthers just didn't use it. So I was disappointed in Chula for that. I think he was unprepared.
Yeah.
He was surprised how much man Oakland ended up playing.
Well, you're not wrong to think that way, because Oakland's defense has not been that great in the secondary all year. So for Chula to think, well, they're going to man up, because – to be fair, if you look at most of the great defenses in the NFL right now, they do play a lot of man-to-man because they have the personnel to do it. So, in my opinion, I could see why Shula was surprised by that, and I think that the Raiders made a great game plan out of it. Like, the Panthers' offensive line is not very good, and we have some good pass rushers here. We have Irvin, we have Mack, so let's force their wide receivers to beat us down the field, and we'll try to get the sack first. And I just think that that was a great game plan against the Panthers, and I think that it just caused problems for Shula because it got to a point where we had to pass down the field. So,
well, I feel like the Raiders notoriously run a lot of zone stuff. They used to run a lot of man stuff when they had Nnamdi Asamoah. When he was, you know, their big-time, you know, shut-down corner, I feel like from what I've seen lately, at least for the last year or two, they've been running a lot of zone stuff, and for us to show up, and we were expecting a lot of zone, not a lot of man, kind of is – it's going towards what CP is saying, that I think it just kind of threw us for a loop, and which is why in the second half we started coming back because we started game planning for that. I think there's a little bit – it was a little too late, you know, to keep scoring and stuff like that. You know, obviously, you know, the Raiders came back, but we did score, 25 unanswered points. But it was a little too late. If we'd have recognized that, you know, after the first quarter, then I think it could have been a larger margin for the Raiders to come back. But as CP was saying, I think – when they started running a lot of man, it really threw Shula for a loop because that's not what you're typically seeing. They don't have Nnamdi Asamoah on that team anymore. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but that's just what I saw.
I really liked Jonathan Stewart's huge run early in the game, though. I think it was like 30 or 40 or 50 yards or something. But that's
mm-hmm.
one of the Panthers' most successful run plays. It's called Counter OF, and it's basically just a man-to-man straight-up blocking scheme. Everyone just blocks their man. That play is guaranteed to get you good yardage. And we saw in that play, you basically have Norwell come around and kick out the defensive end, and then you either have your fullback or your tight end act as the lead blocker. And, you know, it was just a massive hole for Stewart just to go right. I wish they would run that more.
You're right. You're right, CP. And I think that the Panthers are in a really good setup right now because they have a solid right guard, a mauler in Trey Turner, and they have an athletic pulling guard like Andrew Norwell. And he does the kickout blocks so well all the time. And that was a perfect example of it. It's just this year has been really hamstringing for that interior line because Khalil's been hurt. Remmers has been out of place. You got Darrell Williams, who's been not even remotely ready. So it really underscores the fact that, like, Norwell and Turner at their positions are decent. And I think that even Turner, with all the turnover going around him, has played poorly just because there's no rapport there with the other offensive linemen.
I agree with you. And it's going to be so important for the Panthers to figure out what they want to do in the next couple years with Ryan Khalil's play slowly declining. You're seeing injuries now starting to build up. What do they do at that position? Because the center position for the Panthers is so important, not just for protecting Cam Newton, but also in the overall run game, because you need that interior three. For the Panthers' inside zone and their power schemes, they need to have a solid interior three. They have not had consistent interior play this year, with Khalil being up and down and being injured.
That's why we were so successful last year. We had the luxury of being healthy across that line. Makeshift or not, we had that luxury, and we don't have that this year, and now we're being exposed.
That's right.
Hey, Jackson. You still there?
He dipped out. He's taking fireball shots. He's taking fireball shots.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I muted myself because I did have to take a shot of fireball. But go ahead.
Well, we just wanted to know where you wanted to go from here, I guess.
I let a couple other numbers in. I got an 828, 584. 3002.
I got one question. You reckon it'd help Benjamin if he loses about 10 or 20 off that butt?
And I
didn't. he might move a little better and get a little separation.
Kind of, he's a tub of goo, huh?
There's you.
Tell him like it is.
That's a nickname.
Tell him, I mean,
I don't know.
I thought Williams is a heck of a run blocker. If you looked at him several games this year, I noticed one, I believe it was Saints. You know, they've been running the tight end, bringing one of the linemen in over there and running basically power right off that side. They've been doing well. They sort of went away from it.
Darrell Williams looks like a guard when you, like, and I'm actually working on this GIF post right now, and the first play up is that Stewart run, and you're going to see that actually it's Darrell Williams who fires off the damn ball and just drives his guy back like 4 yards. So he kind of makes the play. I mean, he really sets the wedge there. He could be a good guard, tackle, like a good backup player for us when we actually find our real right tackle.
Didn't we just sign his teammate from Oklahoma, Tyrus Thompson?
Tyrus Thompson, that's right.
Oh, really?
He's a tackle guard.
I'll let you explain how that works with the offensive line.
Yeah.
That's not my forte.
Yeah.
The Panthers worked both of them out, I think, if I remember correctly.
They did.
They did.
They worked out in the same week.
Yep.
They did. They signed him. Yep. Now, this one was the guy that had an injury, or he was injury prone or something. There was some worry about him injury wise.
Yeah, he has a history. That's right.
But I don't know where he's been. He's on the roster, but they haven't put any stats up on him yet. But they're showing him in a Saints uniform.
Yeah, I think he was assigned to the practice squad, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's on the practice squad. But, yeah, he had a nice block on that run. Everyone did. And Tolbert got a good block, but his guy kind of got tripped. so
that's
he kind
why he
pancaked him, but it was easy, yeah. And so there was just nobody there. He got him with the hair gel.
He got him with the hair gel.
When it's a man,
oh, the hair
team,
gel.
You block your man, and there's just a big run lane for you.
Yep.
If only it were always that simple.
I know.
Unfortunately.
When it works, it just looks like perfection.
I wouldn't mind getting your take on Bradbury and Worley, CP. See what you think about those two. They're gross, if you didn't mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've obviously had their rookie struggles, but, you know, the Panthers are clearly showing a lot of confidence in them. They don't play a lot of Tampa 2 or cover 2 defense, which shows that they trust those guys out there on islands, you know, minimum safety.
Yeah. Them.
So, obviously, the coaches think highly of them. They're giving them a lot of snaps. I think, you know, it's good that they're getting all these snaps this year because at least you get all those, you know, rookie issues and everything out of the way so that hopefully next year they're better.
I'm kind of excited about them.
Well, CP, coming back to that tackle situation, looking at this offseason, I'm a firm believer that you fill your real holes in free agency, not the draft. You know, what do you think Gettleman has to do in free agency this year to realistically address this problem?
I'm not sure who
he got to sign a left and a right tackle
this offseason, but I mean, he's got to bring in competition. You know, that's the one thing. When you look at the 2014 season, Byron Bell was one of the worst ranked tackles in 2011, 2012, and 2013. And in 2014, Gettleman basically gave him a promotion by making him the starting left tackle. Same with Nate Chandler. There was really no competition at either tackle spot, which I thought was ridiculous. And that was one of my main points on my rant that I've been going on the past 3 days, that Gettleman hasn't done much. I mean, you give these two guys, you know, they're starting jobs and there's no competition. So there's really no motivation for them, I think, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
And so you've got to bring in competition. I don't care who it is. You've got to bring in some names. You've got to spend some money. Because the new estimate has it now at over $50 million in cap space this offseason. And you've got 4 draft picks in the top 100. There's really no excuse for Gettleman. It's make or break this offseason for him.
Wow. $50 million. Got to, you know. Yeah.
You were saying that you think that Orr is going to retire. If he actually does retire, I think that brings us to about $70 million in cap space. Is that correct?
I don't think he was making that much money, was he? $3 million a season or something?
I
thought
it was on a 2-year
deal.
He's towards the end of his contract anyways. From what I'm seeing, before it was about $40 million, but the cap overall is expected to increase for every team as well this offseason as more of that TV money comes in. So right now, the estimate I've seen on Twitter is about $50 million, but that could change up or down a couple of
times. Does anybody have
Orr's
guaranteed money in there?
That's what I was wondering, because I read
something. He definitely
got something
guaranteed with that contract.
Yeah, I think it was like $9 million, wasn't it? Six to $9 million, if I'm not mistaken.
It was a pretty good contract for the Panthers, so I would say that's probably accurate.
That's right.
But I don't
know
that.
We gave him a new deal, didn't we, in the offseason?
Yeah,
right. I'm just looking.
Yeah,
it kind of
flew under the radar.
The first
of
three.
It was 3 years, $21 million. So his cap hit this season was $6 million. And he only has a dead cap of $3 million next year. So it's not.
Wow,
really
so not a lot of guaranteed money. Damn, okay.
No. He got most of it.
Okay.
This year. So, yes, if Orr retires, it's not going to hurt the Panthers very much.
Can
yeah.
I.
Money.
Do you guys mind if I interject real quick?
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, we do. We do. Just so you know.
You do mind. Okay. Well, we got on the topic of Bradbury and Worley, and then we kind of strayed a little bit. But I wanted to ask CP and you guys as well. So, from my experience, just watching them, and from my own personal experience, I've noticed just a general growth in confidence with them. And specifically, like, it seems like they seem to anticipate plays more. And there were a couple plays in the Saints game where they both made amazing pass deflections that were all nullified by penalties because somebody else screwed something up. Is that what you're seeing, CP? Are you seeing that growth there where, like, they seem like they're more comfortable at their cornerback positions now compared to, like, the first few games of the season?
I think that's especially the case with Worley, who is slowly transitioning into a solid cornerback. At the beginning of the season,
yeah,
he was a mess. As far as his technique was concerned, as far as, you know, his assignments, he was bad in zone coverage. I thought he gambled a little bit at times as well. There were some plays where he just got beat, and the quarterback was lucky that they didn't even see him get beat. So I think he's had the most growth so far this season. He's playing really tight coverage right now. If you got to look at the broadcast.
I agree. I actually think that Worley has grown more than – I think Worley from start to finish right now has grown more than any of the other corners. Like, Bradbury has been playing consistently, but I think Worley has really stepped his game up since the beginning.
That's right. Bradbury has always been the more pro-ready guy, even coming out of college. Even though he went to a small school, he's always had more of a –
Same school as Cortland Finnegan, by the way.
Cortland Finnegan, the old Luke Kuechly Bane. I remember him.
that's the same school that Bradbury went to, Samford. Yeah.
Samford, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm just glad we got him.
Contract, in spot track. I totally forgot. I was thinking he was the end of his 2-year deal, but we re-signed him for 3. So. I don't know. He may try to come back. You know, looking at this contract, he's got some incentive to come back. You know, he got a nice, you know, he's going to get another $3 million roster bonus just for making the roster next year. So he's got $9 million guaranteed. Yeah. But you got to – how does that work? I mean, you got to pay some of that back if you give up, if you get a big signing bonus, but then you retire or don't finish your
it happened with Anthony Davis, if you remember that. The right tackle for the 49ers. The 49ers wanted some of his, actually a lot of his signing bonus back because he retired midway through.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll come to that.
Yeah.
Like, I do wonder if Oer seriously had these bad concussion symptoms, and maybe it really was like a, we don't know if he's going to get conditioned in time to be ready, but,
yeah,
you know, it is definitely something to think about for sure.
I mean, he made a butt ton of money this year for 2 games, but he can make just as much next year. I don't know. We'll see. I totally forgot about that, so I never brought that up. I appreciate it. It makes me feel a little better about him coming back, even though I hope they don't think he's the answer. You know,
he could be the
nice
answer to right tackle, maybe.
Put a left tackle behind, you know, a rookie behind him for a few games.
Is anybody wondering what Luke Kuechly's going to do? I mean, he did go see a specialist, did he not?
I'm expecting him to miss at least 3 games.
I just want him to sit out the rest of the year.
If they came back
that would
and
be
said,
ideal.
Yeah. If they came back and said, you know, what happened to him on the field was just as much about the shot to the ribs as it was the shot to the head. And that really his concussion was only, you know, was a middle-of-the-road type of thing, not a really bad one like he had last year. But his reaction was more to the shot to the ribs and losing his breath. You know, maybe then I could see that he wouldn't miss that much time. But you know, that's just me doctoring from my seat in the stands.
Put him on
yeah.
IR.
I think I'd rather see him go on IR than to come back and, like, get hurt again. And I think most people would agree with that. I don't think he wants that to happen because he loves the game too much. But he's the one guy that, honestly, if for some reason he decided, you know what, I'm better than this, I don't want to get hurt anymore, I'm going to retire, I think I could live with that. It would suck, but I would be okay with it. He's the one person that I would say I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
He's just
yep.
such a good guy. I don't want to see him hurt.
I've said for a long time that would run me out of this game is if players that I love end up can't function in their life because they've taken too many shots to the head. Go ahead, CP.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you left Khalil and Gronkowski on IR now. How is the offensive line going to look? I mean, is Trey Turner going to keep playing right tackle?
I know how it's going to look, CP. Go ahead, Jackson, do your drop. Do the toilet drop. That's exactly how it's
going to look. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, this is how it's going to work. Followed by our opponents. Their fans are clapping. Yeah. So, yeah, if Darrell Williams is hurt, then, yeah, we have Trey Turner at right tackle, Chris Scott at right guard, Tyler Larson at center, Remmers at left.
What's
yeah. doing
is on the last play on the Khalil Mack strip sack. It looked like it was, you know, just Trey Turner versus Khalil Mack, but it was actually by design a triple teaming of Mack. So you had Trey Turner as the right tackle, who's one-on-one. You have Fozzie Whitaker, the running back. He's outside support if Mack chooses to go outside. And then on the inside at right guard, you actually have Chris Scott. His job is to quickly read the nose tackle, see if the center needs help, and then he's got to slide over and be inside yep. support. He was way too late getting over. And as a result, Mack saw Whitaker on the outside support, and he is so explosive. He absolutely destroyed Turner with an inside move and got to Cam. That's just an incredible
thing. He's an absolute freak. He's an absolute freak.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember people writing him off because he went to the University of
Buffalo.
Small school player. I'm like, you got to put on some of this tape. This guy is making plays, snap after snap. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. I mean, he was a special prospect in college.
Yeah, he wasn't recruited by virtually anyone. Good for him, though. I mean, he made the most of what he could, and good for him.
What comes to mind for me about Mack was last year when the Raiders were not nearly as good as they are this year, and you see the Raiders playing really close to the Super Bowl champion Broncos, and the main reason was because Mack had four sacks, four freaking sacks
yep.
against Peyton Manning. Like, guy's a monster,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
We need our own Von Miller / Khalil Mack now. We need to find one.
We do. We need
That's
one
Tony
bad.
Ely. Right there.
Yeah, it's well, it's like we, you know, the last few weeks, it's like there's always one player on the other team that just eats our lunch that I'm like, I wish we had that guy, Khalil
it's
Mack.
Always
and,
outside.
Aaron Donald ate our lunch. Who's the kid from Auburn, at the Chiefs guy?
D4?
D4.
Now.
That's right.
D4,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
God,
yeah.
That guy.
He played
man.
With Cam, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Got his revenge.
Yep. He looks like Cameron Wake, the way he's built. I mean, it's just, you know, big muscle-bound, no fat on him type of dude.
People thought he was a bust in his first year because he only had like two sacks.
Yeah, a lot of people thought he was going to be a bust.
You know, we've become so impatient. We're always wanting it now. that, you know,
yep.
three, four, six games into a rookie's career, like, oh, yeah, he's not going to be that good. You got to give these guys
instant
time.
Gratification.
And
that's
you,
right. Like
12 sacks.
You,
so.
You bring up a good point there in the sense that I actually think that part of that comes from the fact that the speed rushers seem to do better in the NFL right away, only because athletically they measure up to the other tackles they play against, where the power rushers need to bulk up, need to put on some strength, need to figure out how to use their hands against offensive
yeah.
tackles in the NFL, because offensive tackles in the NFL have seen all sorts of different rushers, where speed
That's
rushers
right.
can come in and beat them with their speed right away.
As a speed rusher, you're probably going to be a bit lighter. You're probably going to be around 6'3", 6'4", probably in the 240, 250 range, which means you're probably going to get drafted by a 3-4 team. And 3-4 teams use a lot of different looks. They disguise their blitzes. So often, you're not even going to be double-teamed. You're going to be in one-on-one situations. Sometimes, if you're playing on a 3-4 team that's really good at their disguise, you might even end up one-on-one against a tight end or a running back. So it's definitely a lot easier for them. I agree with you.
And a lot of the offensive linemen and stuff that are being drafted now are so much lighter because they're running so much hurry up in college. You know, a good, I would say a modest offensive tackle might be, what, 280? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I'd say about 290, 300, something like that. Centers
yeah.
are definitely in the low 290s now. Centers
yeah.
are really light in college.
Hieronymus Grasso. He's the guy that was at Oregon that I really liked. He was pretty light, if I'm not mistaken. He was like, what, 280, 290, something like that.
Yeah. I think DJ Humphreys as well, he was like 280 or something. You know, he was almost like
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if he's
yeah.
put on some bulk since he came into the NFL, but he's struggling.
He needs to put on a Tolbert. You're heavy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was making a joke the other day, like, you know, with the Panthers and during the Raiders game, I mean, I thought, I'm pretty sure they were completely out of offensive line depth. You know, with the next injury, Tolbert might have had to suit up at guard or something, you know? He's a couple cheeseburgers away from that anyway, so why not?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I think he's listed as 250, but there's no way. He's got to be 270
no.
at least. He's pushing 275.
Yeah.
There is no way that guy's 250. Same with Jonathan Stewart. He's listed as, what, 235? He's 250.
Yeah.
He's got
yeah.
it.
No, yeah. No, yeah.
So Tyrus Thompson was actually drafted by the Vikings in the sixth round.
Mm-hmm.
But he spent last year on IR. Doesn't say what. He got IR'd early, September 6th, and they went ahead and gave him an injury settlement. Then he hit so the Jags put him on their practice squad. But I guess they cut him. The Lions signed him in the offseason. Cut him May 9th. What a weird day to cut somebody. And then the Saints picked him up. And so they had him. Well, shit, they put him on IR September 4th of this year. Released. So, I don't know. He might be too damn hurt right now to play.
I think that was his
might
biggest knock. I mean.
Yeah. It may have, just stashing him as somebody who could compete next year and do one of those future signings
think,
or something.
Yeah. I think that's what they're hoping. And maybe they're hoping that now that he's reunited with his college buddy, Darrell Williams, maybe that'll help him out as well. He can get some guidance
yeah.
or something, you know.
It could be.
But, yeah, he was
I'd
the right tackle.
Shot, sure.
He was the right tackle. He was the right tackle at Oklahoma, I believe. And Darrell Williams
yeah.
was the left
yeah.
tackle.
Yeah, he was the left.
Yeah,
Tyrus
Thompson's a big dude. I remember watching his tape. He's a very big dude.
Yeah, he's big.
Yeah,
well,
he looked, I mean, we really scouted the shit out of him, so we know him well.
Oh, yeah, they know him very
so.
Well. They did their research on him.
But, yeah, staying healthy apparently is his issue. So we'll see, yeah. So I don't expect him to get called up anytime soon, if at all. But, you know, maybe that's...
Do you guys...
Hey, this is Gettleman doing something about his tackle situation.
Oh, yeah. It seems like you read my post.
Praise be.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you guys think that Gettleman would actually draft a tackle or a, maybe even another center or anything
well,
like that? You know, an upcoming draft.
Supposedly, the pick between the pick on in 2014 was between Humphreys and Thompson. So
correct.
When Humphreys
yep.
went to the Cardinals, that was when they picked Thompson. If the Cardinals picked literally anybody else for Thompson, the Panthers would have picked Humphreys. That was the impression I got from what I had read. Was
right.
that Humphreys was the guy on the board for them to take. So
yeah,
like Thompson.
Like I said earlier in the show, I think that part of the problem in the draft has been that Gettleman's been kind of hamstrung by picking in the back end of the first round because you're basically picking between the very last few first-round graded talents and the second-round graded talents, which the best player available philosophy would prevail in that sense and take the guy that would be a contributor for years instead of a guy that has those question marks, which looking at it now, retrospectively, I would say maybe he should have taken that gamble and just taken a guy that would have addressed the need. But as we all know, that's not how it works sometimes. And you might get the DJ Humphreys of the tackles who isn't worth a damn, you know? So.
A lot of
I
those
like
guys Humphreys. Haven't been worth anything.
Not DJ Humphreys, TJ Clemmings, I'm sorry.
Oh, TJ
Clemmings. TJ Clemmings,
okay.
Yeah.
For the Vikings.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
he
a
was
lot of
bad.
Those early round tackles were bad, as you're saying, TB, you know? Fisher, Jokel, a lot of those guys. I mean, they've had good games, sure, but I mean, they've had more bad games than good. In my opinion.
Oh, I agree with you. There is a massive problem in the NFL right now. The defensive linemen are getting better, and the offensive linemen, especially on the edges, just seem to be getting worse. And I think teams are in a weird spot right now. They really just don't know what to do about it. And the Panthers
you know,
are running.
I was going to say Greg Robinson was supposed to be, you know, the next, you know, big to-do left tackle. And, I mean, he'd be lucky just to be a guard in the NFL for the Rams. I mean, everybody remembers Greg Robinson being the guy. Same thing with, you know, Fisher because of his combine and blah, blah, blah. But they haven't turned out like that. I mean, it's just all about instant gratification.
Yeah, there's certainly a dearth of talent in the NFL as far as just offensive line talent in general. And really, to gather an offensive line that's strong from top to bottom, you have to spend first-round picks on basically everybody at this point.
Which is what the Cowboys kind of did.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
exactly
what I was going to say. They've definitely done it right.
Yeah,
but
listen,
you also
it does not look like a good year for offensive tackles. Just over on Walter Football, and there's only a couple guys here they got as top 20.
Yeah,
but
I've heard it's
anyway.
To be a bad
it's still early. Yeah, looks like a lost CP. But yeah, we're down to a minute, so I think we're going to go ahead and call it, guys. I appreciate my very special guest, Brian Beavers Lewis, who's joined us from the blog. And I don't know, where are you from, Brian? What, you're in North Carolina? Where are you?
Lancaster, PA.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
AKA Amish country.
All right. Well, appreciate
and
you dialing
I still can't
in.
Find anybody on Facebook, Jackson. I sent a Facebook request on Facebook for Cat Scratch Reader, but
mm-hmm.
I think that one might have been
all right,
old.
I'll look
know.
It up. I don't really monitor that very much. I got somebody else that does that, but I'll take that up and see what your request is there. But, hey, I appreciate you guys. We'll try to do it again next Tuesday. And, again, let me
yeah,
go
Panthers. Yeah, if you can do it next Tuesday, dude.
All right,
we can
man.
Do
let's
it next
do it.
Tuesday. I'll jump on again.
That sounds fun, man.
Sounds good.
Hey, y'all have a good evening.
All right,
yeah,
guys.
You too.